Welcome to the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. My name is Natalie Nidham. I'm a nutritionist, a human potential and epigenetic coach, and I created this podcast to bring you the latest ways to take control of your health and longevity. We cover it all, from new technology to ancestral health practices, personalized interventions, and a very special interest of mine, peptides. Enjoy the show.
Hey folks, welcome back to the show. I'm so excited about today's guest, Dr. Dan Pompa. You've probably heard the name. You've maybe even heard him speak or done one of his programs. The man is a legend when it comes to the space of helping to support detoxification through the various systems. And his own story is actually amazing and incredibly inspiring. Now, before we jump in, I do want to thank you, of course, for being here. I'd love to invite you to share this episode with anybody in your network or your friends or your family who you think would get value from it. And of course, if you could take a moment to leave us a review on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, it would be massively appreciated by me. And last but not least, make sure that you head on over to natnidham.com and make sure to sign up for my newsletter, because that's where I keep people abreast of all the new things I'm coming across. I talk about the podcast. And of course, I also talk about many of the events I'll be attending live over the next few months. And so who knows, maybe our paths will cross in person. All right. Now, before we jump into the episode, of course, we want to take a moment to thank our sponsors. And the first one is something really cool. Have you heard about C15, or otherwise known as pentadecanoic acid? It is actually an essential fatty acid that the body needs to age healthily. And not only that, it is the first essential fatty acid that has been discovered in the last 90 years. And what makes an essential fatty acid essential? And that is that your body can't make it yourself, except that it needs it. So what C15 does is it promotes a healthy immune system. It improves heart health and increases metabolism. It's actually found in trace amounts in milk fat, as well as in certain types of fish and plants. Now, what does it actually, how does it do all these things? It actually helps to strengthen the membrane of every one of the cells in your body. And we know that those cell membranes are critical to every aspect of our health. Now, how do I get my C15 in? Like, you know, I could eat loads of butter, which some people would love and I would love, except that it's not actually that practical and the amount of butter I would need would be massive. So instead, I use this really great supplement called Fatty 15. And ever since I've started supplementing with it, I've noticed that my mood's a bit calmer, my sleep's gotten a bit better, my skin's looking awfully good. So this tiny little capsule allows me to get as much C15 as I need without increasing my total saturated fat intake as well. Now, I know saturated fat, big, big topic out there. Personally, I don't do as well with it as some people. In any event, Fatty 15 is a once daily oral supplement working to counter age-related breakdown while strengthening cell membranes, keeping mitochondria working, naturally activating receptors throughout the body and brain, regulating immunity, metabolism, mood, appetite, and sleep. And it contains exactly one ingredient, pure pentadecanoic acid, or C15. Now, to try it for yourself, you can go head on over to fatty15.com/nat and make sure to use code NAT to save. Okay, let's talk about this episode. Are you one of those people that's tried all of the popular detoxification methods but continually feel worse and worse? Well, this is the episode for you. In this episode, I talk with Dr. Dan Pompa about why popular detox methods aren't the answer to many of the chronic problems people are suffering from. True detoxification starts within the cell. And Dr. Pompa, a leader in the field, discusses the five R's. It's a step-by-step guide to cellular health. We also discuss many detoxification myths, hormone resistance, which actually can be caused by toxins in the cell, and where hormesis, what it is, and where it really fits in. Now, this episode will give you guidance on upregulating your cell's detox pathways, how to adapt to good stress for maximum benefits, as well as the importance of reducing cellular inflammation. Now, for the past two decades, Dr. Pompa has been designing, practicing, and teaching his cellular detox strategies around the world, both to practitioners and to the public. Dr. Pompa's powerful presentations focus on ancient fasting strategies, cellular detox, his multi-therapeutic approach to healing, and common but frequently misdiagnosed autoimmune, hormone, and neurodegenerative conditions. Dr. Pompa's own stories, which he's titled From Pain to Purpose, to Promise, unveils how his health struggles, family tragedy, and legal battles have transformed him into a powerful health and longevity evangelist, which has ultimately led him to fulfill his purpose. He is truly a leader in this space. Now, to learn more about Dr. Pompa and his new programs, you can follow him, of course, on Instagram, Dr. Pompa. It's just DrPompa. You can go to the website, pompaprogram.com, or you can go to, that's for his programs, or you can go to drpompa.com where you'll learn all about everything about Dr. Pompa. And if you check out the show notes, we will have a code for you for the Pompa program. If you decide you want to step up and take part in one of these programs, it'll be, there'll be a code for you and a link in the show notes. Okay. One more sponsor we need to thank, and that is are Beam Minerals, which I am obsessed with. They will help you to energize your body and boost performance. These minerals provide the key to unlocking your full energy potential. Just like your house needs electricity to function, your body relies on minerals to power every major system. Low minerals mean low energy and low performance. It's kind of like living with a partial electrical supply. So, nobody needs to settle for a body blackout. Just one shot glass of Beam Minerals a day is all it takes to turn the lights back on. Experience a surge of energy that revitalizes essential systems, promoting faster healing, clearer thinking, as well as optimal functioning. So you can give your body the minerals it craves, and then you can just sit back and watch as it performs at its peak. You can get 20% off at beamminerals.com. just by using code NAT20. All right. And now let's jump into the episode and chat with Dr. Pompa.
Hey, folks, just a quick reminder that all of the information presented in this podcast is for information purposes only. No medical advice, no diagnosing, no treatments suggested here. Before you try anything that you hear about or learn about here, make sure that you check with your medical provider.
Welcome to the show, Dr. Pompa. It is such a pleasure to have you here. It's, like I said, first came across you a number of years ago in person, and here we are. Who would have thunk it?
I'm glad to be here. You brought up a seminar that you were at like eons ago in Vegas, like Henderson, Vegas. My immediate reaction was, oh my, like a long time ago. And I think Mindy Peltz, who you know, was like just beginning.
She was just starting. Yeah, he pulled her up on stage as a shining example, going, this woman is doing amazing things.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I said, like, look, I encouraged her. I said, you're a woman. You need to take this diet variation principle and the principles you're learning here, the feast, famine, cycling, and take it to women and their cycles. They're not going to hear it from me, you know, although we can talk about it. But yes, and she's done that. So that's wonderful.
Yeah, no, she's done a really nice job. But, you know, you and I remember at that time, that was the very first time I ever heard the word cavitation. And, you know, that whole area of health where everything that's happening in your mouth and in your jaw having such a deep impact on your systemic health, that whole piece of the puzzle is just, it's only that body of knowledge has only exploded ever since.
Yeah. You know, I mean, one of the things, you know, this because you've been at my seminars, I've been training doctors for 20 years plus, and I'm hammering still this day. I said my message hasn't changed, right? We have to fix the cell to get well. We have to get to causes. Cavitation, it's like, you know, hidden infection is one of those causes that doctors. Moved away from. I think it was almost like getting traction at one point. This is why people are sick. Do you remember the movie The Root Cause? Mm-hmm. I don't know if you saw the movie, but it exposed root canals as being like why. And this gentleman told his story, and then they talked about cavitation. It's like, and then they ban it from Netflix. It was like, it was just like getting out there, right? It was like, because I've been talking about, and what we mean by that, let's just bring your listening audience, to an understanding of what we're talking about. If you get teeth removed, like wisdom teeth as an example, but it could be any tooth, they take the tooth away, it heals over 20 years later, all of a sudden you have this weird autoimmune condition or this weird condition. You have no idea why, what's going on, or maybe it's a gut that won't heal. And I'm like, well, you know, we might want to look if you have a cavitation, but I have no pain. Mm-hmm. I had my wisdom teeth, you know, when I was a teenager. You know, there's something now called a cone beam that right. we didn't have when I was sick, you know, but we're able to analyze the jaw in this 3D style CAT scan. And we're able to see these holes that basically infection hides. You wonder mm-hmm. why people can't get rid of Lyme, parasites. These pathogens literally hide in these little caves. And until you get rid of the cave, you won't get rid of the pathogens. I don't care what you do systemically, how many you know, killers you take, you know, it just doesn't work. That's the dangerous part. And these infections, they move in and out of circulation and they keep your immune system. They create hyperimmunity and hypoimmunity and they decimate lives, but people don't look under the rocks. And that's my pounding practitioners. Look for cause. That's just one of them.
Yeah, no, that's so interesting. I mean, of course, half the battle these days is actually finding the dentist who will do, who has the equipment to do the cone scan and who will even listen to you. I mean, it's, I think dentistry still has a long way to go in catching up on this stuff.
It's Natalie, it's estimated that 84% of all chronic illness starts in the mouth. Mm-hmm. Let's say it's 60. Okay. It's so those aren't my numbers, but the point is that you're right. Whether it be silver fillings that contain 50% mercury and still, whether it's 30-year-old filling, 40-year-old filling, it's still vaporizing mercury into the brain, which is one of the things that, you know, made me sick. Then it's these cavitations and then it's airway issues. You know, so many problems start here. And I it's amazing to me that these functional medicine practitioners, alternative practitioners, they're spending a lot of money on genetic testing, this testing, that testing. And people, you know, it's so amazing and cool. And they leave with a lot of supplements. Did you actually think about the causative factors, you know, that could be coming from here? Right. And it's, you know, it's again, this is one area that we look at. But if that much chronic disease starts here, and by the way, what are we doing with all these gut problems? We understand now. The gut problems are driving autoimmune. It's driving brain problems. You know, it's all, you know, the gut's related to all these things. It's like, but we're trying to fix it with more probiotics and diet change. Mm-hmm. If it were only that simple, it's not mm-hmm. that simple, mm-hmm. especially when you have a problem here. These guys go back and forth, literally. Yeah. You know, if you start nailing them here, they'll go up into their hiding places up in here. The oral cavity. And to your point, by the way, dentists, even the ones that do cone beam, they don't even know how to read it for cavitation. A dentist has to have a special software that they're able to go around the area. And that's a skill, right, that they have to learn. Otherwise, they look at them as plain films. And it's not. It's
doesn't
not
give them any information. So just for you guys who were listening, when Dr. Pompa was just talking about here and the gut, here was the mouth. And I think part of what contributes to here also, it's even things as basic as mouth breathing is mm-hmm. a massive part of the problem, right? I mean, your mouth, and in some ways I feel like it's less defended even than your nose. Like it's an entrance into the inner outer chamber, if you will, given that, you know, everything between your mouth and your anus is the outside world to your body, but it's Absolutely. That open passage that allows things in. I won't spend too much time on this because we have lots of the good things to talk about.
I recently
went to a seminar and there was a dentist there and he was talking about the oral microbiome. And he said, until we start to address what's happening to, because that is part, it's like stomach acid is part of your defense system in your stomach.
Yeah.
That oral microbiome has everything to do with your defense system. So, okay. Yeah. So not to dwell on that because we have other things we were going to talk about. We can always do another episode about the mouth.
Yeah. Honestly, I could do a whole episode just on the oral microbiome, its relation to the gut microbiome.
I know. With a guy like you, I have to be really careful because next thing you know, we're down a rabbit hole. It's an hour later. And you know what? It would be a great episode, just would be different.
Absolutely.
So some of the things that we were talking about beforehand is, let's start with this whole idea of detox. And detoxification is one of the most maligned kind of concepts by the conventional medicine, by allopathic medicine, and even scientists. They're like, you know, all this detox stuff is all bullshit. Your body can detox just fine, which it can, unless it's actually overwhelmed, which I don't know. Absolutely. There's a possibility.
Right. Yeah, very much so. Yeah.
Yeah. But we were going to talk about some detox myths, and you had some really good ones in there. And one of them being about IV chelation, because, and it's interesting because I run a couple of one very large community and one smaller one. And you often hear about people who, like, I had one woman recently come in and say, you know, I've been chelating for 2 years and I feel worse than I ever have.
Yes.
And I'm not getting anywhere. My mold is no better. My, like, you know, and she's got the laundry list of horrible things going on. And so maybe let's talk a little bit about IV chelation. I mean, there's a place for it, but how is it getting abused and used and misused?
You're right. There is a place for it. If you have acute heavy metal toxicity, absolutely the place. Put in a bulk of chelation. It could save your life. Okay. But let's talk about what you said. Why do people oftentimes get sick from it or go, you know, I really don't feel better. I just had this conversation last night with a gentleman at dinner. I did IV chelation. You know, am I good? I said, no. I said, certain symptoms may have gone away because you cleared some body stuff. But what happens is these IV chelators, DMPS, EDTA, glutathione, they pull and they go away. They have a half-life, meaning how long they last in circulation, if you will, right? And then it goes away and then redistribution starts. And he says, you know, my severe brain fog started after that. He goes, even though that my gut got a little better, right? So he cleared some of the body. But what was happening is redistribution, and that a lot of it ends up in the brain. Look, I learned a lot when I was sick, right? And I have to say God brought me through a lot of learning, and I learned a lot of things the hard way. Chelation was one of them. My wife thought she was going to have to take me to an insane asylum after I, you know, did some chelation. It happened to me two or three times. It was like, it's weird. You get convinced to do things. It was happened with DMPS when I tested. And then it happened with EDTA, and then it happened with glutathione. So,
it's why I mentioned the trio.
It's like, it's almost like I thought it wouldn't be this one because I didn't understand the principle. You know, I didn't understand the principle of it comes in, pulls a lot. It only lasts so long, but then the body's moving things out of tissue. And now because the chelator's gone, it redistributes. And look, I think the other myth around this is, even when you're dealing with heavy metals, and that's where chelation really gets, you know, its popularity, it's not the answer. You don't detox just with a chelator. Chelators are water soluble. They can move things out of the body, even when taken correctly. So think about this. Taken correctly means taking it within its half-life. So you'd have to do for DMPS, you'd have to take it every 8 hours, an IV every 8 hours for at least 3 days. So when you stop, you don't get a lot of recirculation. Who's going to do that? Nobody. So there means you have to go to oral DMPS, which is fine. You do it every 8 hours for at least 3 days. When you stop, you don't get the big redistribution. But every 8 hours to keep the levels up in circulation so your body continues to get this process of moving toxins out. But my point is this, though. That's only part of this. The problem, chelators don't get into where the metals really the problem are in the brain, deep into the deep tissues, in your myelin sheath of your nerves. It doesn't work that way. So there's a process, and this is what I've taught for 20 years. Real detox is at the cell. Mm-hmm. You said this at the beginning. You said that we get overwhelmed our detox pathways. Our bodies should detox day in, day out. Your cells have the ability to get rid of toxins that accumulate. And when that's working good, everything's wonderful. But when it's not, and those pathways are basically get exhausted, broken down, if you will, because we're inundated today with so many different neurotoxins, and genetics play some role. But then what happens is now your cells aren't doing what it should do day in, day out. We have to fix the cell. And that's my saying, we have to fix the cell to get well. More specifically, we have to detox the cell to get well. And if we can upregulate those detox pathways in the cell, that's real detox. That's lasting, not a chelator. Chelators we use in my process, but we use them once we start upregulating these cell functions, then we use chelators to grab these toxins and move them all out of the body. So it is part of it. So we use chelators, we use them correctly within their half-life, but it's only part. It's the vehicle that makes sure that it goes all the way out of the body, but they do nothing. DMPS does not get in the cell. EDTA does not get in the cell. Glutathione IV does not get in the cell, despite what somebody tells you. And so, and again, I'm not against them. You just have to use them correctly, and you have to use them within the correct system.
Right. And then would you be also stacking binders on top of that just to mop things up? Because, I mean, the chelator is going to bind physically, but then to your point, if you started a process where things are getting dumped, you definitely need something there to catch it, bind it, and move it out in whatever other fashion.
Yes, correct. I'm going to, I know we have listeners, so I'm going to describe what I've drawn here.
Okay.
So,
but this could be one of those episodes you check also, you'd check it also on YouTube.
So I'm going to explain something, and for people just listening, just visualize with this with me. But so I drew a cell, and I just made the point that I have a process, and we don't need to get into that. I have a process that we upregulate these detox pathways within the cell. Okay. So toxins then start moving from the cell. So I drew an arrow of toxins coming out of the cell. And then outside the cell, I wrote the word chelators. That's where we use chelators, right? They don't make their way in the cell. Now, chelators act as these vehicles that will bring the toxins all the way out of the body. Now, you made a point, but don't you, you know, use binders in and around that? Yes, we do. Because many of these toxins make their way into the gut directly or to the liver, where they bind with bile. And bile is used to digest fat, but bile is a fatty substance. Toxins, it's like a toxin magnet. And there's even something called hepatic, meaning liver, biliary sludge. That means toxic bile sludge, okay? But anyways, so either the toxins that come from the cell end up in the liver or the gut. Either way, what happens is that we need binders in the gut. And so that's what we do. We put binders in the gut. Why? Because these toxins eventually make their way to the gut. And here's the problem. In the lower gut, because these toxins bind up to bile that's in the gut and the liver, they're brought back to the liver because bile is recirculated, recreated in the liver. We call this auto-intoxication. So imagine the toxins being dumped in the gut. One of two things happens. If you have really leaky gut, it could leak right back into the bloodstream. But a lot of it is just brought with this bile process back to the liver and then create recirculation. So we put binders that don't leave the gut in the gut as catcher's mitts. So imagine this three parts now, people just listening. We have to get the pathways in the cell upregulated, okay? And we do that. And then once we do that, the toxins do start to move out of the cell as they should, but we bind those with these chelators to help them move out of the body, but we also use binders in the gut so we don't auto-intoxicate from the gut. Three parts, the cell, the chelators, and then the binders in the gut and the liver. So yeah, so that three-part system, same for, you know, literally same for, you know, 20 years I've been teaching that. And it's, you know, it's now getting catching on because people are just trying to use like Corella, cilantro, this thing, the 10-day cleanse, that cleanse. Look, real detox is a cellular issue. We have to fix that. And then we have to make sure these toxins are moving out of the body. Otherwise, they end up in our brain. Otherwise, they end up in different parts of the body. All we're doing is moving the furniture on the Titanic, right? So, you know, that process, it works. It works.
So do you want to talk a little bit about how you help the cell to re-engage those systems that are supposed to dump the toxins out in the first place? Like in a perfect world, your cell's just dumping toxins like it should, and yet something's happening where that mechanism in the cell is not functioning as it should. So the point being that the chelator's great. It's hanging outside waiting, but if the kid doesn't get out of the building, chelator can't do anything. So
I love that. I use that.
Yeah, by any time. By all means. It's a gift. So how do we get those pathways in the cell re-engaged?
Yeah, I have what is called my five R's. Here's how it was created. I gave a lecture in California and it was to doctors, but I could tell they missed it. You know, I'm like regurgitating all this incredible science, you know, about like the cell energy and cell energy, how it's process of detox and da, da, da. And you can't make glutathione. It's called Gibbs free energy equation without enough, you know, energy and da, 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 da. And I could, and I'm a good lecturer and teacher, and I could tell they didn't get it. Okay.
It's bouncing like, off the
I
brain.
Saw it in their eyes. Yeah, exactly. So I'm flying home and I'm beating myself up. Because I'm just thinking like, what could I have done different? I missed it. Like, you know, and I'm thinking, you know, they needed to know this. You know, I was excited. I was the only one excited in the room. And then literally I prayed. This is a true story. And then I'm telling you, it started downloading. God doesn't always do this for me, but he did this time. And I pulled out the notebook and I started writing. And that was birthed my 5 R's. My 5 R's of how we fix the cell, my 5 R's of how we detox the cell. It became a roadmap of what I taught doctors. And that's what they needed. They needed the roadmap and the system. It was simple enough that the public caught it, right? It caught on to it. So, you know, the 5 R's to answer your question is how we upregulate these cell functions. And we don't have to get into the details of it, but our number one had to be remove source. We talked about cavitations. That's a source that doctors overlook, right? So I wanted people to understand none of this works unless we remove the source. It's like the bathtub is upstairs pouring over all this damage. Think of that as symptoms in somebody's life, right? And if we try to just keep opening up the drain, you know, and forcing the drain open, you know, it probably won't work unless we turn the valves down and slow what's going into the bathtub, right?
There's an idea.
Yeah. So we want to open up the drain and we want to turn the valves down. Our number one is turning the valves down. But, you know, there's specific neurotoxins that are really causing the you know, massive amounts of brain fog, energy loss, weight loss resistance, hormone resistance. We'll talk more about that. But, you know, we want to look for those in R1. R2, you know, and I drew that cell and I'm going to go back to it. So people listening, the cell has membranes and the outer membrane of the cell is a fat layer. It's called a lipid bilayer. But that membrane determines what comes in that cell and comes out. And by the way, so when I teach hours of lectures on the importance of the cell membrane. There's a saying, life and death begins on that membrane.
Yeah.
And meaning that you can eat the perfect diet. You can take all the supplements you want. If that membrane is inflamed by toxins, and that's what happens, then you can't get the nutrition in the cell. You'll never raise the cellular detox pathways. So our number two is we have to regenerate these cell membranes. Otherwise, we are dead in the water. And by the way, when that membrane is inflamed, then you can't get the toxins out. So think about this. When you burn wood in a fireplace, you make smoke. And what do you have to get rid of it? A damper. If that damper's not open, aka inflamed cell membrane from toxins, then bad things happen. Smoke comes in the house and you and your family will die, not from the flames, but from the smoke. So your membrane, think of that as the damper that has to be open. Good stuff in, bad stuff out. Our number three, in every cell, we have these mitochondria where we make energy, okay? ATP energy, that's where we make it, these little mitochondria. Okay, I just mentioned it earlier. There's something called the Gibbs free energy equation, which means that you need a certain amount of energy to make something called glutathione. What is glutathione? It's how the body clears toxins. More importantly, it's how the body combats oxidative stress and inflammation. Without enough of it, our cells get more and more toxic. We get more and more sick, and even something worse happens. As the toxins build up in the cell, so I'm drawing little X's in the cell of more and more toxins building up because the membrane's inflamed, the energy is dropping in the cell, and now glutathione is dropping because you need energy to make glutathione, and these toxins are building up the DNA, your nucleus. So I drew a nucleus with DNA in it, and what happens is you're turning now bad genes on. So toxins are building up in your cells. The folks listening, this is why you don't feel well despite diet change, despite taking hormones, despite toxins are building up in the cell. Yes, your genes are getting triggered. Your medical doctor might tell you you have a thyroid condition or diabetes because your mother or father did baloney. Those genes get turned on. Yes, we have genes of susceptibility. But years ago, if you remember, you and I are old enough to remember, it said, Time Magazine, your DNA is not your destiny. What that meant was genes are triggered. You just didn't get unlucky, inherit a thyroid gene. No, but what triggers these genes is these toxins building up in our cells. Okay, so energy. Then the next R is R4, which is inflammation, right? As inflammation builds up, as I just pointed out, we get less good stuff in the cell, less bad stuff out of the cell. The mitochondria, where we make energy, those membranes now inflame. And now we make even less energy. In the Gibbs free energy equation means less energy, less glutathione, and more inflammation.
It's a
Okay.
dumpster fire, guys, just to
Yeah.
be clear.
So my point is this. You see what I'm saying? It's
Yeah.
in all this is happening, and people are just thinking of sitting in a sauna is good. I love saunas, nothing against a sauna, but the point is it's inferior to why we don't feel well. And then R5 is reestablishing something called methylation. You know, methylation has gotten a lot of attention because the MTHFR genotype, and everyone wants to put someone in a genotype. But look, toxic cells, toxic people have depleted methylation. And now it plays into the cell's ability to detox. As methylation drops, glutathione once again drops, and the cell can't get rid of toxins. Toxins build up, genes get triggered. I'm singing the same song. So
Yeah.
those five things need to be fixed if we're really going to detox. Detox is a cellular problem. So it's not a chelator. It's not the lack of chelators. Once we get these things rolling, and you know, the better people feel, the genes can start to turn off, you know, and we can start to, you know, get these toxins to continue to move out of the body. You know, 20 years of doing this, and you know, I finally have said, okay, I'm going to continue to teach doctors this, but I'm also going to take it to directly to the public. And that's where Pompa Program was born, where it's like, I'm going to bring it right myself, you know, because people need to know it.
Well, and I think it helps people to find the doctors and choose the doctors that are more aligned, right?
Yes, yes.
I think at the end of the day, and by empowering the consumer, you're giving them back the power over their own health. And we see it in our parents' generations, and you know, where they're like, look, whatever the doctor tells me is what I'm going to do. And sadly, you still have a lot of those people. And I think part of it is because the responsibility of being responsible for your own health and wellness, it's a big responsibility. And people would just like, just tell me what to do and I'll do it.
Yeah,
And
it's true. Yeah.
I think that by teaching people, and I mean, frankly, it's why podcasts like mine and all these other podcasts out there are becoming so pop have become so popular, is because people want to know. They understand that they have to be a partner in this journey at the very
Yeah,
least, right?
that's true.
And your physician's your partner.
Absolutely. Well, you know, one thing I found too is when I was in a brick and mortar practice, people came in and they didn't care to learn. They just wanted to be treated. I became virtual and started doing like teaching people the process. I was forced to teach people the process,
Yeah.
and therefore they were empowered to do it long enough to matter, number one, and to empower others and their family. And that became the greatest thing. It was like, because I never thought that was going to be the greatest thing, actually teaching people the process, but I was forced to because I wasn't in a practice. When people were coming to me in practice, the moment they were leave, they would just stop doing it. But
Yeah.
when you teach people virtually, they continue to do this. And by the way, you know, this process, I still do, right? Because we are constantly inundated with toxins today. So I just don't do it as frequent. I do a cycle periodically. And that means I'm on these things for, you know, 3 days to a week, and then I'm off, you know, for a period of time. But,
Sorry.
you know, look, if you just look at the amount of aluminum that's coming out of our sky, because, and again, I'm not going conspiracy here because, you know, I know people talk about chemtrails, this, that, and the other thing, but what they've done to jet fuel, this is not theory. They've done things to jet fuel to make it more efficient. It's about dollars and cents. And if they can make jet fuel more efficient, they save billions of dollars, not millions. So they have. And aluminum is one of the things they have in jet fuel as an additive. That's why we see these streaks across the sky like we haven't seen before. You know, to some degree, you would see it on certain days of humidity, et cetera, or, you know, barometric pressures. But now you see it all the time because there's particular matter in jet fuel that was never there before. Aluminum is literally falling down on us in our food, in our water. You mix aluminum with something that we were all exposed to generationally, mercury, Aluminum and mercury are causing massive brain fog in our society, massive neurodegenerative conditions. You know, I can't even go on to say. It's like, and so that my point is that this process needs to be learned, because the only way to get that, and aluminum and mercury, they go for the brain. They go right in. And if you don't get it out of there, all the saunas you want, all the 10-day cleanses, you know, whatever it is, you can't. You have to get it out of here.
Yeah, the chlorella, cilantro, juice cleanses, all the things. And actually, I think that when I came to that seminar, I actually put one of my friends on that three, and I don't know. I mean, I haven't looked at your stuff in a while, so I don't know if it's still there. But it was a 3-step program. Yeah. to help the body to clear toxins. And there was a very deliberate order of operations.
Yes.
To move things. And I think it started with the cell, and then it moved to the body, and then the brain, or maybe I've got the brain and the body.
No, you got reversed. It right. Wow, it's amazing. Yeah. You remember that. But yeah, I start with a prep phase, and we want to just start lightly getting the cell working again, the pathways in the cells we described. We want to open up the downstream drains, if you will, the liver, the kidney, the lymph, right? So that's all part of the prep phase. And we keep that going, but we put on the gas in the body phase. The body phase is where the goal is just to clear the body, and we start the detox, whether it be a week on, week off, 3 days on, 4 days off. We start this pulsing, and then all that to get to the brain phase. That's where you get your life back. You know, when I was sick, I started getting sick about 1999, 2000, 2001, 2003. That was my worst years. But look, I took me a while to figure out what was going wrong, probably about 3 years. Mm-hmm. And I was working with a very bright endocrinologist, and he said, "Dan, I think you have mercury poisoning." And I had read all his books, and you know, I thought maybe I did too. I said, "You know, I thought so too. I did a blood test about a year ago." He said, "Oh, that's a wrong test. That would be a test if you had acute, meaning getting daily exposure of mercury, it would show up, but it's out of the blood in 2 or 3 days. Most metals are. You have to challenge it out of your tissue. And even that isn't a perfect test because it doesn't show what's in the brain." Needless to say, I had all kinds of metals abnormally built, you know, show up. So I said, where do you think I got this mercury?" He said, "Do you have any dental work done around the time this happened?" Sure enough, I had 2 silver fillings taken out just randomly, still had a mouthful. And that was it. But look, it wasn't just it though. I wore contact lenses in the 70s, 80s, early 90s. Mercury was in the thimerosal. There was a time where I was eating fish, like, you know, at least three, four times a week. I was like, you know, that's what I did. I lived at the beach. Anyways, build up mercury. Most of it, the problem was in my brain. I realized though, that when I was looking for an answer, I realized, like, okay, my thyroid was not functioning well, although my blood work was normal. And there's a reason for that. Okay. Cause I had something called hormone resistance. I didn't know it, but anyway, so my adrenals were fried. You know, I knew my hormones weren't working well. I mean, my hair was like in the drain. I was thinning. I mean, I was young then. I mean, I'm old now, but I was young then. So something, I literally got skinny fat. I was losing muscle. I was gaining fat. Like, I mean, everything was tanking.
Everything's going the wrong way.
Everything was going the wrong way. I didn't have enough energy to make it through a day. And then anxiety started, then sleep problems. And then, but anyways, addressing, like most people, the hormone stuff down here, trying to figure it out. I realized the problem was my pituitary hypothalamus. That's the control tower of your hormone, your endocrine system, right?
Yep.
So that's when I realized, okay, you know, mercury accumulates there. I just, you know, didn't realize what was wrong. And then anyways, everything I learned to get myself well is what I teach today. It's the brain metal. It was poisoning my pituitary, driving hormone dysfunction. And I had so many heavy metals around my cell membranes. It was driving my hormone resistance. So yeah, that's my story. And that's what I learned in it.
And that's what you teach. So one question I had for you, actually, when we're removing one of the many issues of heavy metal toxicity is that it displaces what should be there. So those heavy metals displace minerals like zinc and copper, like, and you know, these spark plugs of the cell kind of thing.
Sure.
They displace minerals that should be there. So and you know, there's another person I'd interviewed once who talked about how important it is when you're undertaking whatever process to move these heavy metals out of the body, how important it is to also at the same time be replenishing these other minerals to make sure that, you know, nature is not big on a vacuum. It's like something's got to be there kind of thing.
It's true. Yeah, they resemble one another. Heavy metals are essentially minerals. And so, yes, they when you start pulling the heavy metals out, you create mineral gaps, as we say. And those mineral gaps have to be replaced. You know, a lot of people can't fix their mineral problem, if you will, because they keep having practitioners say, oh, your hair is brittle because you lack minerals. This is happening because you lack minerals. Your nails are weak because you lack minerals. And all that may be true. But the problem is they can't fix their mineral problem because of heavy metals are where, to your point, are where the minerals should be. And therefore, the problem is heavy metals. And now you can fix, as the metals are going out, now the minerals will, so you have to replace one with the other, to your point.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Heavy metals, the squatters of the cell.
Yeah, you know, and it's, yeah, exactly. The squad like that. Man, see, she's.
You can have that too.
this woman is just a breath of knowledge and, you know, just the wisdom keeps emanating from your mouth. Perfect. I'm writing these down.
Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So we've kind of more or less done our tea talk, Smiths. Like, so basically the point being that all of these like IV chelation, chlorella and cilantro, juice cleanse, sauna, it's not that they're not good assistance to detoxification, but if you haven't started the process by moving the toxins from the first place where they sit, where they're doing the most damage, you're not going to make progress. You're hitting your head against the wall. So
you're so smart. Yes.
Yes.
You got it. If you got it, they got it.
They got it. It's all about all of us getting it together. All right. Uh-huh. So we've talked about some detox myths. The other thing we were going to talk about were, well, actually, before we do that, because you've mentioned it a couple of times, hormone resistance. Like, let's dive into that a little bit. And again, we see this. We see people who are doing hormone replacement, whether it's, you know, BHRT or testosterone replacement or whatever the case may be. And yet their levels aren't coming up or they don't feel better than they did before. It's just not, it's like, they're not getting the traction that they should get. So I'm going to guess that maybe there's receptors, things are sitting in receptors that shouldn't be there, just as a wild guess, but I'm going to let you run with this one too.
And I tell you what, Natalie got a
lot of that
seminar, you know, 15 years ago, 10 years ago, whatever it was. But anyway, yes, that is true. It's called hormone resistance. But let me start here. Okay, so we have bought in as a society that blood levels of hormones are the, you know, end all be all. Meaning, oh, your estrogen's low, let's give you estrogen. Oh, your testosterone's low, let's give you testosterone. You know, oh, your thyroid hormone is now low, you know, let's give you thyroid hormone. If it were only that simple. And people out there are going, okay, yeah, because I replaced my hormones. I'm taking hormones. In the beginning, I felt a little better, but I'm still not able to lose weight. I still don't have energy to make through the day. I still have brain fog. I'm going to show you why that is, because to your point, now, listening audience, you're going to wish you were viewing, but I'm going to do the darn best I can to explain this. I drew another circle as a cell. And on that circle, I have these antenna looking receptors. Okay. These are hormone receptors. So think about a little hairy cell, a hairy circle. But every hormone has to attach to these receptors. So I just drew T3 that attached to a receptor on a cell. I could draw insulin. I could draw estrogen. I could draw testosterone, progesterone. So all these receptors have to bind to these receptors. And then they themselves get in the cell or they send a message in the cell. And when that happens, all is well. We make plenty of energy. We feel great. Our brain works great. Everything's great. But what happens if something's blocking these receptors and the hormone doesn't get into the cell or its message in the cell? I'll keep it simple. We don't feel well, despite diet change, despite taking hormones. So my point is I just drew a big artery up here above the cell. If our blood levels of thyroid are made normal by taking thyroid hormone, okay, great, wonderful. You go back to your doctor after he gives you the hormone and he goes, hey, congratulations, your blood levels look great. And you're like, doc, My hair is still thinning. My skin's dry. Have no energy. Can't lose weight. What's wrong? Well, it must be something else. Yeah. It's the fact that your cells can't hear the darn hormones, right? Mm-hmm. It's like a car runs out of gas. You know, we can dump gasoline all over the car, but unless it gets in the car, the car's not going to run. I mean, that's the insanity. And here's another example for those of you who have kids. Okay. So they might go after a while, let's just give you more hormones. Let's take more hormones. When we first shout at our kids, they listen. They go, oh, mom's mad, dad's mad. They listen. But what happens if we keep shouting? They listen less and less and less and less to the point where we're shouting, screaming, and our kids are like oblivious. That's what's happening to our cells. More and more hormones in the cells are getting more and more resistant. The more hormones you take, the more resistant the cells get, literally. You know, so, you know, insulin resistance, people are familiar with that term. That means the cell receptor is not hearing insulin. Blood levels of insulin are usually fine or high, you know, but what's the problem then? It's the receptor. It's resistant. Why aren't we talking about hormone resistance? Your cells aren't hearing the hormones. But that is what thyroid is, the thyroid conditions, most of it. Now, again, I also could draw a brain here, and we're not going to draw a brain because, you know, we're not going to draw a human. But anyways, I just drew a brain. In the center of that brain is the control tower of your hormones. I already made that point with my story. That also controls your hormones. And when that's poisoned, I'm pointing to my head, the center of my head, the pituitary. Guess what? The feedback mechanism's broke because the hypothalamus gets information of what hormones you need more of, and then it tells the pituitary, and the pituitary drives information down to your thyroid, your adrenals, and all is well. But what if the control tower is poisoned? You know, now nothing works good. My point is that toxins are the problem. But why are we trying to get people well by throwing more hormones at them? Look, there's a time and a place. I'm not saying there's not, but this is not the answer. We have gone to, you know, south in helping these people that are hormone challenged. And listen, the real reason why people can't lose weight, it is a hormone problem, but you're not going to fix it by taking more hormones. You're just not. Mm-hmm. So you're going to fix it by getting to the cell. And again, now if you would ask the questions, if you saw me draw the cell, what's blocking those receptors? Inflammation. That's what's blocking damage to this membrane. That's what's blocking the receptors. Then the better question is what's causing it? Well, we're being inundated with these toxins that have the ability to drive cellular inflammation. Back to the how we started this whole podcast. If we don't get to that cause, our number one, you're never going to get your life back. It sounds so simple. You see why I've taught doctors this for 20 years and see why there might be a little frustration in my voice, because I'm like, we're getting worse. Alternative medicine, we're moving further away from getting to the cause, it seems. It's like more genetic testing, more gut microbiome testing. What are we doing? Let's get to the cause of this problem.
Hey guys, if you're busy like me, you may struggle to get right to sleep at night. The endless to-do list just won't turn off. Now, one of the reasons for a super active brain at night might lie in a tiny area of the brain called the suprachiasmatic nucleus. We call it the SCN for short. This master switch controls the body's natural sleep-wake cycle, also known as your circadian rhythm. It tells you when to feel tired, fall asleep, eat, and even when you are likely to be most productive. Now, for many sleep-deprived individuals, the problem often stems from a malfunctioning SCN. External cues, light, food, exercise, and social interaction, called Zeitgebers, significantly impact the SCN and overall sleep quality. Among them, light plays the most crucial role in regulating your sleep-wake cycle. You guys probably know all this already. Now, this is why melatonin supplements, which act as an artificial light Zeitgeber, have become popular. But relying only on melatonin can be counterproductive. While our bodies naturally produce a small amount, around 0.3 milligrams, melatonin supplements often contain much higher doses, anywhere from 3 to 10 milligrams. And this significant increase can desensitize the body to its natural production, making it difficult to regulate melatonin levels during different sleep stages. So you may be wondering, if melatonin isn't the answer, well, what is? Well, Bioptimizer Sleep Breakthrough, I love this product, is a delicious pre-bed drink designed to unlock deep, restful sleep naturally. This natural formula features magnolia bark for enhanced deep sleep, promoting relaxation and bypassing melatonin-induced grogginess. It works by stimulating natural melatonin production, calming the mind, maximizing deep sleep stages, and minimizing sleep disturbances. Unlike sleep aids that can leave you feeling sluggish, Sleep Breakthrough prioritizes high-quality sleep. So when I use it, I wake up feeling refreshed and energized. Now, I like to take it about 45 minutes before I go to bed. So for Sleep Breakthrough, all you have to do is go to sleepbreakthrough.com/bionat and make sure to use code BIONAT10 at checkout to save 10% off your purchase. So once again, that's sleepbreakthrough.com/bionat. Make sure to use code BIONAT10 at checkout. And now let's get back to the episode. So you never said you wanted to talk about this three-step program, but I keep coming back to it because I think that it is so foundational to, and you said it earlier, actually, that it's not like you have to wait till you're toxic to run it, because at some level, at this stage of the game, because of all the toxins that we're, because of the soup we're living in, and no matter, you know, even if you're trying to eat all organic foods, even if you're trying to, you've got HEPA air filters in your house, even, you know, all the things, the minute you walk out the door, it's just pervasive in our environment right now. So, and I'm not saying that to freak people out and send you running for your duvet and go hiding under your duvet. I mean, you can do that. And that's not going to help, because unless you got a particular kind of mattress, there's probably toxins there too.
That was funny.
Sorry, not funny. I apologize. Sorry, guys. But this is about doing regular maintenance that maybe you wouldn't have had to do 100 years ago.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
Or maybe even 70 years ago. I don't know when it all started, or 50 years ago, but doing these regular cycles of maintenance where you support the body's ability to detoxify at a cellular level. And we can talk about it, just reducing your toxic load.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, in doing it at the cellular level, doing it correctly. You know, I literally started something last year. For the first time, I pointed out that I've been teaching doctors for 20 years. You know, I really believe, and men, no offense, but I believe that healthcare crisis will be solved by women and moms, and just, you know, women who are looking out for their families and loved ones. Women have this desire to fix this problem. Men kind of, you know, until they actually have a heart attack or, you know, something really bad happens, they're really not interested. Their wives typically are leading them. Now, there's exceptions to this, right? I'm one of them, right? I'm a man exception.
No, you're generalizing. It's all good.
Yeah, I'm generalizing. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that, you know, I realize that I want to certify the average person, right? House mom looking for her children. And again, could be you know, the man in the family too. But fact is I want to teach them instead of the doctor. And I started a certification program because of what you're saying, because I realized that, you know, we all need this. And I have to train people just going, okay, I want to protect me and my family. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's when I started the certification for just someone who says, hey, I want to be a coach, or I just want to learn it for my family. And, you know, you could obviously make a business from it, but 20 years of this, and I put it into a certification, you know, and made it affordable and made it, you know, it's an amazing program. But, and of course I have a program for people who are sick. If you're sick, hire, you know, get in that program and have one of my coaches walk you through. But if you're looking for just to make a difference in your family and you, you know, take the certification. But to your point, I believe that's the impact, is we have to protect ourselves from what's going on today. Glyphosate, it's being sprayed. It's a pesticide herbicide that's being sprayed on most all of our food. Mm-hmm. And it's 60% of the rain. So it's even hitting organic soils. What does it do? It opens up our gut barrier. That's why we see an explosion of autoimmune, explosion of food intolerances. Oh, and it opens up the blood-brain barrier.
Yeah.
And according to one of the senior scientists at MIT, Stephanie Seneff, 2012, her study showed that it's allowing our already existing things like mercury, aluminum, what we've been talking about, to cross deeper into the brain. And she believes it's driving all these neurodegenerative conditions. And, you know, so it's a problem and we need to pay attention. We need to learn this system.
Yeah. Well, but it's a problem with a solution. You know, I think, I mean, it's maybe not a perfect solution, because the perfect solution would be, you know, a solution that you don't have to repeat over and over again. But there is a solution. There is a way to help the body, to assist the body through this. Like at some level, there's a lot of people who are saying, look, non-native EMFs, yeah, they're really toxic to the body right now. We will adapt. The problem is we will not adapt in a month or a year or a generation. It's going to take time. So until that stressor becomes a hormetic stressor, which is going to lead into the next part of our conversation.
Yes, yeah.
Love a good segue, almost as much as a good analogy. But until it becomes a hormetic stressor, and it's a stressor that has the capacity to overwhelm our systems, we do have to find these kind of stopgap solutions, if you want to call them that, that allows the body to kind of clear, or allows you to assist the body in clearing the way so that it can go back to working properly at a cellular level. And, you know, I often say, how far upstream can you find a solution? Because then you allow the wisdom of the body to do its thing, which we've yet to replicate, right? So,
you know, the body heals itself. All we can do is remove the interference. Yeah. Your body knows how to heal cancer. Your body knows, no doctor. Your body knows how to heal diabetes, thyroid, kidney, hormone. Your body knows how to heal if we remove what's interfering with the innate intelligence, meaning inborn intelligence that God put there that heals every day. But when it's interfered with, problems start. You know, you actually said something very intelligent. I mean, not, this isn't the first time. I made it sound really bad there. It's a miracle.
I forgive you.
No, you said a lot of intelligent things, but this was amazing because you said eventually you will, like the generations will adapt to a lot of these toxins. You're actually right. That's how intelligent our bodies, but it could take five generations to your point. Like if you look at the amount of electromagnetic EMFs that we're exposed to, right? You know, I do believe that our children have a greater adaptation to some of this. I don't believe it's still good for them, the amount, right?
Yeah.
It's too much is not good. But remember, every generation is going to adapt to EMFs, you know, more and more. You and I, we have had hardly any growing up. Yeah. So our adaptation stinks. It is absolutely going to affect us more than the generations to come. But that was a very intuitive thought.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Thank you. Why, thanks. Okay, so our final topic of the day, which I think we'll bring it home with this one, was on the subject of hormesis, which is, so hormesis, for those of you who might be new to the podcast, might not know what that is a stressor that is enough to drive adaptation to the body, but not enough to overwhelm your system. So it's a good stressor. So, you know, so in this, we have things like fasting, we have deliberate cold exposure, we have sauna, we have red light and near infrared light, which we're going to have so much fun with in a minute. And essentially, when does a stressor become not a hormetic stressor, but a negative? And so I'm going to stop talking in a minute and let Dr. Pompa rip on this one.
Well, look, I'll get everyone's attention. If you understand this principle and apply it for you and your family, your health's going to go to another level. You're going to get the most out of everything you do, including just simple diet. Okay, so understand a principle. I believe when we understand a principle and apply a principle, that's when really life changes. So expect that, but try to understand this. If I start with the extreme of extremes, I sat through a lecture one time, bright scientist, man, amazing lecture. And he said the most profound thing that I almost didn't agree with on the surface until I thought it through. He used mercury as an example. Now, I just got done telling you how toxic mercury it ruined my life.
Yeah, you have mercury PTSD. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. He showed a graph of how mercury can cause all these changes in rats. He actually did the study, gave rats a small amount of mercury and saw this massive rise in glutathione and all these pathways and like all these positives. And then he showed the fact that all of a sudden everything dropped and the rats died shortly after. But he showed that if we'd have stopped here, it could have been a positive. So even something as toxic as mercury has a hormetic curve, meaning if they adapt, if the rats adapted to the mercury, they had all these positive things happen. But the problem with mercury lead metals is this hormetic curve is very sharp. And he showed that it was up and down, meaning be careful, right? So if you look at homeopathics, it's really the principle. They're giving you small amounts of, even small amounts of mercury and getting this, you know, parts per million, trillion, and getting this hormetic blip. Okay, now let's take it to something that we do, at least some of us do a lot every day, exercise. Exercise applies to this principle. If let's give an example of somebody who just starts a workout routine. They go to the gym, they do something, they're, you know, getting all these benefits and everything's wonderful. All of a sudden they start not getting benefits. What's happened is that the body doesn't perceive what you're doing as a stress anymore. So therefore, it doesn't adapt to the stress. And therefore, you know, you don't get results. As a matter of fact, studies show that you actually get a diminishing return. So that means going to the gym, doing the same thing you always had been and started is actually worse than not going to the gym. What? Okay, let me take it another step further. Let's take this principle. Every stress, if you adapt, is a positive. Emotional stress, toxic stress. If you don't adapt, it becomes a big, big negative. So exercise is only a positive if you adapt. Good trainers know this, right? That's why you don't get stronger in the gym. You get stronger adapting at home. If you overtrain, your body doesn't adapt. You get weaker and weaker and weaker. That's why athletes hire good coaches to make sure they're adapting, getting stronger and faster and stronger. So the principle is you have to adapt. Okay, let's take it to cold plunges. Cold plunges, you know how they work? They literally, your body thinks it's going to die. That sounds like a horrible stress. Oh, it is. Right? I mean, it's more stressful than emotional stress to your body because it literally thinks it's going to die. So it's worse than the most awful emotional stress. However, to survive and adapt, it raises something called norepinephrine, which raises growth hormone, which all these, your cells become more hormone sensitive and all, you know, all of a sudden it de-inflames, but that's only if you adapt. So what if you did too long because your friend does 3 minutes, you did 3 minutes, now you don't adapt. Now this same thing that was helping all these people and you hear all the wonderful benefits about becomes a horrible negative. And you're tired the next day or maybe even the next day after and you don't even realize it was the cold bath because when you come out, you felt so good because of the norepinephrine rise. Yeah. Okay, saunas are the same way. People can stay in too long. And if you don't adapt to the heat, the stress of the heat, you become, you know, worse, not better. So when I was sick, my body's ability to adapt became very, very low. The sicker we get, the more challenges we have, the less we adapt. We know that just with stress in our kids. Like, oh my God, you can't handle your own stress anymore, right? Yeah. Is it stress or is it your ability to or inability to adapt to the stress? I would argue it's your inability to adapt to the stress, but I couldn't even take too hot of showers because I just wiped out. I wasn't adapting to the heat. I'd go outside. I had to like put hats on because I'd get headaches if it was too cold.
Yeah.
So again, it wasn't the cold. It wasn't the heat. It was my body's inability to adapt. So all of these things that people are doing are applied to this premise of hormesis. And diet, no doubt applies too. And we'll talk about that. Let's keep that separate. Let's deal with these things and ask me some questions around it because I want people to understand this and then we'll take it to the other extremes.
Yeah, no, and I think that's such a, you know, the what you bring up. And I think what's really interesting is we like, and especially hard things, we like to do hard things as a group, right? Mm-hmm. Because it helps us to, especially when it comes to things like jumping into a tub of ice, like who really does that in the right mind? Or, you know, sitting in a sauna that's crazy hot. And I think one of the challenges, and it makes it easier to do it in community, but at the same time, I think the caveat and what people really have to be mindful of is that they don't get swept up in this and end up, you know, with the group doing something that they're not ready for. And I think that's such a great point and it's such an important point. I remember talking to a guy once, every time he did a sauna, he'd be out for 2 days. And you know, in his case, I mean, he had a lot of toxic exposure and he had it had mobilized so many of the toxins. Whether he wasn't doing the right things to move them out or whatever the case, he just wasn't ready. It was too much and it was overwhelming.
And it may have just been the heat, right? I mean, that's the thing, right? It may have just been the heat. You know, there are newer studies are showing that like 10 second hit with cold, you know, even in a shower, which would never be as cold as 37 degrees, you know, is actually got better performance results than the 3 minute cold bath. Okay. So many serious biohackers know what I'm talking about, that study. And it's because of this premise that this study probably looked at the average people. Now, again, you get the stud athlete who's doing cold baths all the time. They're probably not going to get much out of the 10-second cold thing. And they think that we're crazy and the study must have been wrong. No, it was done on average people. And average people are going to get more from the less stress. That's like me going in and doing Ben Greenfield. You know, I don't know if your audience knows who he is. Fitness guru, friend of mine. But, you know, I always use him as the example because he's very extreme. And doing his exercise, you would not get good results. You'd actually get, you'd make yourself too sore. Yeah, you'd die. You'd be not good. You would actually do more damage than help, right? So you don't start at that level. You don't start at a 3-minute bath. You don't start at, you know, that thing. You work up, you know, you bring the hormetic ceiling, as we say, up slowly, right? And now you'll get more out of it. And you always, always, always monitor how you feel. How did you sleep that night? Having an Oura ring or something, look at heart rate variability. How you feel is simple enough. How'd you feel the next day, right? Mm-hmm. It's like, because now when we stop and look at those things, we can say, you know what? I didn't feel great. I need to lower my sauna time. I need to lower my cold time. I need to, whatever it is, whatever stress you're doing.
Yeah, it's about building up slowly and looking at those recovery. And, you know, it's so funny. Like lately I've talked to a few people about getting some kind of a self-monitoring device. And they're like, oh, but you know, I don't want to do that. I get so obsessed. And I'm like, look, you need to think about this not as a report card and a judgment. You need to look at this as feedback.
Yes.
Like this is data that your body, sometimes it's hard for us for whatever reason to connect to how we're really feeling. Having one of these things, like my Oura sitting in its charger upstairs, having one of these things to refer to in the morning, not to tell you how you're feeling, but to give you insight into how is your nervous system recovering. And if you've overpushed that nervous system, you will know. And that's your, as you say, this is your invitation to kind of dial it back a little bit and give yourself the time to build up gradually.
More is not better. Even with, you know, a highly trained athlete, they know they're good trainers, take them through times of high intensity and back them down to low intensity longer, right? So they, and then also to keep the body fooled, they adapt intensity, high intensity, lower intensity, high intensity. And by the way, I learned the same thing with diet variation. You know, it's like, so when we change feast famine, a lot of people, they're into fasting now. Fasting is a tremendous stress on the body. Once again, the body thinks it's going to die. So it does all these wonderful things to save your life. And if you adapt to fasting, it's amazing. But people try to apply the same fast as their friends doing because they hear 15 hours fast, 5-day fast, 3-day fast. It's a stress. You have to work your body up to that stress and listen to your body. And then you'll get the most out of the fast. I see people today who are doing too much fasting, you know, their body's not adapting. And I can tell they have a gaunt look. So we have to be very, very cautious. But I interviewed a scientist some years ago and she proved it was a mouse study. So, you know, we could, you know, say, what is that? But it's something they compared every day. They looked at different diets, whether it be low fat, high carb, low carb, all the different diets. She compared it to every other day fasting. Now, it wasn't a complete fast. It was feast famine. Famine, they brought it down just small amounts of calories, and then they gave them the regular diet, small amounts of calories, regular diet. It worked better for weight loss resistance in the mouse group that they created the weight loss resistance than any other diet. The answer, question I asked her is why. She said, oh, it's simple. The feast famine creates a stress, and to adapt to the stress, the body uses hormones. So you get a hormone optimization. You get this rise in growth hormone. The cells become more, yes, exactly the same thing that happens in cold baths, saunas, right? You know, so the feast famine created a hormone optimization. And that's when I was like, diet variation, right? Yeah. It's like every culture on the planet varies their diet seasonally somehow because of weather changes, different stressors. But you know, it's like when we do it even weekly, it's magic, you know, because of this principle of hormesis.
Well, and I think that it brings us to, it's almost like it's a law of nature, the law of pulsing, right? You can't violate that law, and it applies to everything from what you said earlier about yelling at your toddler, where they will eventually block you out, to variation in temperature, which is where, you know, I have a very good friend who trains ice bath coaches, but her tagline is, your comfort zone is killing you. And so what's hurting us the most is this chronic application of anything, whether it's fasting, whether it's feasting, whether it's being hot, whether it's being cold. Like, nature doesn't like that. Our bodies don't like that. They like a push and a pull and a push and a, like, that's just how
that's
we function.
The way the detox is. We push and then we pause. We push. Yeah. Yeah. You're 100% right. I mean, you know, that's the way it is in nature, you know, but again, it's, if we adapt to any stress, it's positive.
Yeah.
Right. The problem is again, when we look at how do we become better, we have to raise our adaptive ceiling, don't we? Mm-hmm. Our hermetic ceiling. So how do we do that? Well, we start with small stressors and we work up. Again, the easiest to understand is exercise. We start with small amounts and then we make it more intense, but we don't keep going up this intense ladder. No, we back off, let our body heal. And then we, you know, go a little less intense. You know, I was a cyclist, and that's how cyclists train. You know, they don't always just raise intensity. You'll just collapse at a sharp curve down. They do times of intensity, and then they back off. Times of way less intensity, a week of low intensity. Next week, moderate intensity or high intensity. The variation. So it's the same with our diets. The more we vary our diet, actually, the better our microbiomes get. And that's a whole class that I teach. But when we look at the microbiome, there's only, with all the new testing, there's only one thing that actually holds up, is the more diverse your microbiome, meaning types of organisms and organisms, the more diverse that is, the healthier the person, right? So then the question is how do we get that to become diverse? It's not as simple as taking pills. You're talking about 11 bacteria in that pill. Mm-mm. There's thousands upon thousands there, right? So how do we do it? We stress it. We stress the microbiome. And how do we do that? Well, feasting, famine, diet change, all of those things stress the microbiome. It forces change. They freak out and they start making different ones. All of a sudden, you're just eating meat for a period of time. Okay, well, you know, you're on a carnivore or keto diet. Your microbiome's massively stressed and changing and making all these new bacteria to deal with just eating meat. Oh, but you know what the mistake is? What people do? Then they just stay on the meat diet. Yeah. They stay in keto.
I was waiting for that.
They stay in plant-based too long, right? It's like, I love all those diets, but people stay in them. You can't stay on a plant-based diet too long. You'll start to get histamine issues, lectin issues, and inflammation from all of those things that plants bring. It's like, but if you stay in keto too long, a nasty free radical called hydroxynonylone builds up, which causes cancer. And people go, keto diets cause cancer. No, if you stay in it, you know, too long, it can be negative. Diet change. Our ancestors were forced to do it. We need to learn to do it because we have access to the same darn 8 foods all the time. Worst thing you do, you want to monoculture your gut, stay on the same darn diet. But here's the argument that I get, Natalie, but this is the diet that worked for me. I feel best on this diet. If I start eating more meat, I can't digest it. Go slow. Remember hormesis, go slow. Little bits. And all of a sudden now you're in a new diet change with way new bacteria. It works, but it's a principle. I said in the beginning of this, if you understand this principle, you will start applying this to everything in your life. I'm telling you, it works. You know, it's just we have to be knowledgeable of it first. If all you get out of this today is, okay, I'm aware now that stress can be good, but I have to adapt, you know? And so two things, we have to monitor our stress to not do too much, right? Even emotional stress. But we also have to raise our adaptive ability. And then the more stress we have, the better it could be if we adapt.
100%. I love it. Okay. So in closing, for our last topic of the day, and this is something you took to Instagram with, and it's rocking people's worlds right now because, you know where I'm going. And it's Valentine's Day. It's a perfect conversation for today because it's the right color. This whole big kerfuffle about red light and near infrared light and causing cataracts and cancer. There's a paper that just came out. And save our red lights, Dr. Dan. Help us out.
So I finally did a piece on it on my Instagram, I think. And so I was like, okay. The study showed that it produces something called reactive oxygen species, ROS. And that's why it's causing cancer. You know, that's why it can cause cataracts. So it's true. So near infrared, red light therapies can cause the increase in ROS. But then I made the point, but that's how it works.
I was going to say, but that's how they work.
Exactly. So it creates the stress of ROS. But guess what? Your body goes, oh, reactive oxygen species. So it upregulates glutathione. It does all these amazing processes to combat that. And that's how it works. That's how it works in the cell. That's how it works in the mitochondria. You know, all these wonderful things take place when you upregulate mitochondria. You create ROS, and then ROS acts as a signaling molecule. Okay, hold on now. The study still showed that there was an increase in those bad things because they were doing it to the point of no adaption. So if you don't adapt to the ROS, it becomes negative. So the point is the original point. It's not, don't throw the baby out with the bathwater here, right? Don't throw your red lights away because, but that's what people do. Oh my God, it's caused cancer. I'm not doing it again. No. Just limit your time. See how you feel the next day. Do you feel more energized from the red light? Did you sleep better from the red? Did you have less pain? If you notice the next day or that next evening that you had an increase, you probably did too much. Near infrared, red light is a great stress on the mitochondria. Mm-hmm. But again, that's how it works. That's how it works, right? So we don't want to throw the red lights out. We want to use them within our stress window or adaptation window. Right.
Yeah.
So monitor this red light. Don't throw them out. They're not negative. Just adapt to them.
100%. And honestly, I think most of them are programmed 10, 20 minutes tops.
Start less. Start with a minute.
You know, if you're just starting, it's 1 to 2 minutes.
Yeah.
And, you know, if you want to do 1 to 2 minutes, even a couple of times a day, spread out, you can try going there. But anyway, it's just, I mean, I find it disheartening when these papers come out because it's like they're exploiting, a loophole and preying on people's fears. Mm. And it's really it's putting in danger a modality that's actually incredibly positive, that has incredible benefits. It even helps, it increases nitric oxide.
I did red light yesterday.
Yeah.
Yeah, it upregulates nitric oxide. I did red light yesterday. Yeah, so this is a pause. You know, people watched my video and they literally were like, oh my gosh, I saw your video. So should I not do my red light anymore? And I literally was like, oh my gosh, like, did you watch the first 5 seconds of the video?
They
like,
did.
How did you get that out of that?
They got the headline.
I literally went back to my own video. Like, what, did I not make that clear? I made it clear. But people hear the fear, right? And you know, they just go a certain way. And so they want, you know, it to be one way or the other. Is it good or bad? Yeah. Not
just
that simple.
It's never just
good or bad. Could be amazing.
Nuance. Yeah. It's
called HBOTS, hyperbaric. I went to the Hyperbaric Association and I lectured, and you know, it was like that was my lecture. Hyperbaric, the most it works, what it does is it pressurizes oxygen in the tissue, an amazing therapy. But really, how it works is it upregulates ROS, same thing as the red light. Okay. So again, you have to adapt to that. So people go, I did a hyperbaric, I got so sick. Doesn't make it bad. Right. It's just the fact that you didn't adapt. Back it off. Figure out what your body likes or doesn't like. And by the way, something you can do, you can take like natural antioxidants after red light and adapt better. You can raise your hormetic ceiling. You can do it after HBOTS, which HBOT people have learned to do. So you don't want to take it before because you don't want to squash that reactive oxygen species. No different. You don't ever want to take antioxidants, vitamin C before you work out and give it some time after, and then you take that because then it will help you adapt to the stress of exercise, red light, hyperbaric, cold chamber, same thing, right?
Yeah.
You know, taking the antioxidants after will raise your hormetic ceiling. So there's the tip of the day.
Yeah, 100%. And depending on your goals with exercise, you may even want to hold off a little longer because that inflammation, that stressor, that's what builds the muscle. That's what gives you the results.
Exactly.
It's just about, you know, I think that one of the points that I was made in a course was also as we age, sometimes that inflammation doesn't stop after exercise. Mm. So sometimes with an older athlete, we do have to bring in the antioxidants, but still not in the next 10 minutes, after half a day or after a few hours, but give the body a time to kind of
give the body a time. Yeah. You know, I mean, I even like the greater the stress, obviously the sooner you can bring it in, or I should say you're weaker, your ability to adapt, the sooner you can bring it in. The average person, like you said, later that day, right? It's like, and you kind of know If you start getting tired, like, gosh, I worked out, I start getting tired 6 hours later. All right, do something at 4 hours.
Exactly. Don't wait till you fall off the cliff.
Yeah, exactly. But these are principles I hope your audience, your listening audience, really got, because it will change your life if you understand the principle. We all violate it, by the way. I do too. And I stop myself, but learn from it, change.
100%. My audience is super smart. I know they've got this now.
Good.
So, Dr. Dan Pompa, where do people find you and learn more? I think we're coming. Well, we're pretty much at the finish line here.
Well, look, if you're looking for answers for yourself and want one of my coaches, go to pompaprogram.com and watch a webinar that I did. I explain it far deeper, and you'll actually be able to see what I do. And if you want, maybe you're interested in the certification, go to healthcenters.com.
Amazing. Dr. Pampa, thank you so much. It's been a pleasure having this
You're
chat
welcome.
with you,
Yeah,
and
awesome.
look forward to doing it again sometime.
Yeah, we'll talk just about one of those topics next
That's
time.
right, and dive deep.
We can just talk about oral next time. All right.
Right. Thank you. Before we wrap up today's episode, I'd love to invite you to sign up for my newsletter. Each week, I share my biggest key takeaways from that week's podcast episode, giving you insight into how to take action on what you learned in the interview. Plus, I share the biohacks I'm loving that week and why, as well as facts and tips about peptides for longevity. To join the newsletter, head over to natalieniddham.com/newsletter to get access now or find the link in the show notes. Thank you so much for your continued support and for tuning in to today's episode. I wish you all the best this week in biohacking your superhuman performance. Thanks so much for joining me on this episode of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance Podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please remember to leave us a 5-star review on iTunes, because that's what helps us to be heard and to be seen. If you'd like to connect with me directly, or if you'd like to leave any comments, or if you have any questions about this episode, please reach out to me directly through my website, natniddham.com. And of course, if you're not already a member of the Biohacking Superhuman Performance community on Facebook, that's where you'll find me every day. It's a short application. Just answer a couple of questions and you're in and interfacing with other amazing biohackers. Thanks again, and we'll look forward to seeing you on the next episode.